Kabir, I'm an addict.
Amen.
Wow. I've kind of dreamt about the day that I'd be up here. And it's overwhelming. I sat in the car for the last hour, a little nervous about this, and started thinking about, you know, what am I going to say, and all the type of stuff that runs through this addict's head. How am I going to deliver a clear and concise message? And I thought back to dinner last night. The last couple of years here, I've been able to, through the gifts of recovery, be able to afford to come down here a night before everything gets started and have dinner at a local restaurant, which has become a tradition for me and has long time been since for some of my predecessors. And I remember one of them last night, we were just talking about sharing, and they said, you know, as long as I share my experience, strength, and hope, there's nothing to prepare for. And so I laid back in the car and took a nap. And I've always had this particular ability to fall asleep anywhere, and so I put that into good use. Let me first of all, for purposes of identification, say that my clean date is May 1st, 2011. I have not found it necessary to use a mind or mood altering substance since that time. Amazingly enough, this is my 8th convention here. As soon as I got out of jail in 2010, February 7th, 2010, it was Super Bowl Sunday, I remember. I got home, my brother picked me up, and my dad was standing at the end of the driveway with a snow shovel, because we had like 3 feet of snow then. He said, there's no electricity here, welcome home, get to shoveling. And, you know, a couple months later, I ended up here at this convention. So truly honored to stand up here and speak and everything associated with that. I feel safe whenever I'm around you all. That wasn't always the case growing up. I had this like workaholic father, mother that was defenseless against him. 5'5" little guy, right? But he seemed like a giant when I was a kid and would come home. And for whatever reason, would be in some fit of rage over something or another. I watched him, you know, throw my eldest brother down the steps one time and variety of other things like that. When it really came time to get to me, I think he was either just worn out from my elder two brothers or I'm not sure, but he didn't put his hands on me as much, but he didn't need to because I was able to see what he was capable of. And I was terrified, you know, I didn't feel safe. My mother couldn't protect me from him, from his fits of rage, and you know, that was my first experience, and I became further aware of that. I didn't just come into here like, that was it. This happened through doing this thing called step work that we do here. The fellowship in here is great and all, but that program of recovery that I get through working the steps is where I get to the meat and potatoes, and so I come to find out that was my first experience with feeling totally helpless, powerless, with those interactions with my father and people who couldn't protect me from him. You know, life went on. I got introduced to drugs in high school. You know, I'm a garden variety addict. There's nothing really fabulous or fantastic about my story. I didn't get any fights in the street. There was, you know, definitely a lot of run-ins with the law. You couldn't have told me that I had a problem when I got my DUI when I was 19, or when I got another one when I was 22, and when I got another one when I was 25. You couldn't have told me there was a problem with alcohol, right? Because that was always kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, one was like, I didn't put my signal on when I changed the lane. I mean, there weren't like these fabulous DUIs where I careened into like 17 cars and flew out the windshield, and like, you know what I mean? It was just like, there were just kind of these non-events, and I just ended up in jail though. But I could never see that at that particular point. You know, drugs and alcohol. Alcohol is a drug, of course, but we're starting to get a grip on my life. This whole notion of powerlessness that's talked about in the first step was a difficult thing to grasp when I first got here. because I'd grown up in a family where, of course, as I just explained, my father had a great deal of power over all of us. And so I, by my modeling, I mean, sought to have the same things. I looked for relationships and where I could maintain control. You know, whatever it was in work and in all areas of my life, I sought to you know, manifest control and on outcomes, whatever it was. But I've come to find out that that's actually all just an illusion. And all I got is this particular moment right here with you all. And to be honest, as much fear as I had when, you know, thinking about this for the last couple of hours, there's no place I'd rather be than right this moment, right up here with you all. Anyways, time went on, and as the progression of the disease often takes a hold on this addict's life, and as it's written in the literature, you know, the substances got worse. The consequences started to get a lot worse, and it landed me up in a time where I call the beginning of the end, right around when I was 31. My daughter's mom was pregnant with her, and I had really, really stepped up my using game, and by this particular time, I managed to burn a hole through my septum in my nose, and somebody showed me how to transform that particular substance into a different way, and that was it. That was a major descent into the abyss, and I just managed to kind of flush everything down the toilet that I had. All this stuff, all this control that I had sought to gain over my 20s and social acceptability and stuff, I kind of just packed it in that pipe over about a 20-month period. And when I ended up in treatment, I'm not endorsing treatment. That happened to be my particular route and introduction into recovery. I weighed 119 pounds, and I was just a mess. I remember sitting out in front of that treatment center, like laying down in the back seat where people put their feet, like in the feet well. Like I feel like today I fit like in that little space. I was laying there and I was just like looking up, and everything that I had come to know had been entirely shattered pieces. I was outside of this treatment center, not sure I wanted to be there. Being the mama's boy that I am, she was in there doing whatever paperwork she could for me. And there I went. And in this particular treatment center, you know, they told me a lot of stuff during the day. And I came to learn that it was a drug program, which is entirely different than this program of recovery. But in that drug program, you know, I learned about the disease, a lot of different things during the day, educational stuff I felt like that I already knew, because I used to spend a lot of time, you know, researching different things and learning about drugs and thinking that I could outsmart the disease. So it wasn't really too exciting. But in the evening, at this particular treatment center in Rockville, Maryland, where I'm from, they were being in these meetings. And I would come to learn that they're called 12-step meetings. And I didn't really care. I didn't care who came in, CAAANA. All I knew that at day 17, that something had started to make sense. One of the first feelings I could identify with was that I felt better. I started to feel good. And man, did I start to look forward to you all coming in at 8 p.m. every evening, because I was getting tired of seeing the same old people there every day in treatment, in the food line, you know, all the kind of stuff that goes on in treatment, if perhaps you've been. I really, really, on day 21, it was a Saturday in that treatment center, I sat at a men's wrap because they split us up. There was a co-ed treatment center, and the tech there, who was administering that particular group, called on me to go first. And that was the first time that I announced myself as Kabir and an addict in the same sentence. And with that announcement, I believe today that I gained a particular bit of freedom with that admission of being an addict in a public setting with people that understood. You know, I'd like to say that things happened overnight. Leon, you gonna give me that one?
Mm-mm.
No, I gotta keep track.
Yeah. No, I got you.
You know, I like to say things happen overnight, but they didn't. That kind of gut level honesty required, you know, spiritual principle that's aligned with the first step, honesty, was difficult for me. So, you know, as I mentioned to you, I've been to 8 of these. My clean date's May 1st, 2011, so there's some different math there, right? So I didn't get it right away. You know, I came around, I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to hang out with people that were still using. I'd come to the meeting and, you know, go hang out with people in the lifestyle afterwards. And, you know, I got what I got. And about 18 months into recovery, I had a relapse. In that particular event that happened, I crossed across a kitchen counter that had some pill bottles on it. My sponsor tells me never even to pick them up. But that particular day, opportunity crossed desire. And I picked up the bottles and I started looking through them, and I found something that I recognized, and I helped myself to them. And but nothing happened. I went to a meeting the next day. I shouldn't say nothing happened. A lot happened. I stole them, first of all. They weren't mine. They had my name on them. I didn't use them in the sense of they're described on the bottle. I did not take one every 4 hours. Took 17 in 3 seconds. And but I say nothing happened in the sense that I didn't particularly run back to that substance that had brought me to that treatment center. I didn't end up at the bar. I didn't end up not showing up to work the next day. I didn't end up not coming to a meeting to see you all. I did everything I was supposed to do the next day. And so in my dishonest thinking, which is directly related to my disease, I just swept it under the rug and I kept coming back. I said, you know what, Kabir, you deserve a break. You've been doing most of what these people told you. So just go ahead and keep this to yourself and go ahead and continue to come back. And I am a particular member of Narcotics Anonymous who has come around, acknowledged fraudulent clean time, went to a 2-year celebration, did not have 2 years clean. Until that, dishonesty ate a giant manhole size hole through me. And I went back to that treatment center on December 25th of 2011 and delivered a meeting there through H&I because I was involved with all the stuff you all told me to do. I was involved with H&I and taking in meetings and all sorts of stuff. And I left that meeting feeling like a frog. So, long story short, I went to my home group that week, told them what I had done. I had the snot running and everything. And, I've been lying to you all. And, you know, a couple guys that know me well, predecessors, were there, like, laughing at me. Like, you think you're the first one? Like, it was just keep coming back, man. And that's what I realized today, is that you all don't care how much clean time I got. Sure, you know, clean time does speak for many things. And on some day, that clean day, May 1st, 2011, means a lot to me. And sometimes it don't, in the sense that I really, one of the greatest things about this program is just for today format, that I don't, if I can, and if I work with you all, and if I do all the things you all suggest, that I can be in this particular day and enjoy it to the maximum. I'm eternally grateful for this program. My life is so much different than anything I had ever expected. That relationship that went to pieces when I first went into treatment with my daughter's mom has now been repaired. I'm a productive member of society. I'm a father to this child who's going to soon be 11 years old. Although I did use in her presence when she was about 3 years old, she does not recognize her father as ever having used in front of her, does not know what that looks like. There's so much today in so many different ways past the drugs that powerlessness I've encountered it in my program. I've had bouts of a relationship seeking. I spoke to, you know, finding women. I often hear people in the fellowship talk about, you know, food and sex, and it's not for me with the ladies. It's more like finding one that I can, you know, keep under my thumb. That has been my practice. I've done it in the room, and you know, food, of course. People who are local to me know about it because it's not even a joke. I had a terrible time with cupcakes at like year three. Like a serious, like the gourmet cupcakes, like that cost $3 a piece. Like I would spend like $60 a week on these cupcakes. Like it was out of control, man. I would like sit in the car like I was copping, like lean back. This place you know, I know we don't endorse that. Like this Georgetown cupcakes, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like these major cupcakes around where I live. There'd be a line out of the store, and I'd like seriously like I'd lay down in the car, like wait for the line to thin out. Like if I'm at the dope spot, to, like, you know, they're gonna see me coming to get cupcakes again. It was I had to talk about it. I mean, they're like, you know, bad stuff, like taking over my life, financial unmanageability from it. I mean, it all sorts of ways that if I'm not paying attention, this thing creeps in, is gonna try and kill me one way or another. I mean, I am convinced that the disease does want to kill me, but it'll be happy for settling to keep me miserable and spending up everything in my pocket on you know, things that material items, whatever it is. And so I got to keep it totally up front. You know, I guess rewinding back to that particular episode where I talked about where I announced the fact that I had used and I wanted to announce that to the fellowship. That was that particular turning point in my recovery where I got wholeheartedly honest. And there's a lot of growth that has happened since then. You know, denial can be so run so deep that in that particular episode when I used in April of 2011, I couldn't even remember when it was. And so, you know, I just ended up taking that clean date of May 1st is what my sponsor and I decided we'd do since I couldn't remember. You know, I just got to keep it up front that I'm powerless over people, places, and things. As long as I do all the things that you all recommend, that I'm going to be okay a day at a time. It has truly been an honor to stand up here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I thank you all for listening.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Darren. I'm definitely an addict.
Hey, Darren.
So that's like 8 conventions, right? So this is my first convention. My clean date is June 9th, 2006. And this is my first convention. So when I first came to this fellowship, I had a lot to say. Most of it was most of it was pretty much, we used to have this expression in New York where I was born. I was still burping crack, right? I was fresh. I was angry. Smoke still coming off of me. And I would talk all the time, most of the time about nothing. Ah, just throwing up on the meat, right? But as I kept coming back and making the coffee and, man, sit your punk ass down. I began to hear things, not just my story, but I heard your story, right? Because I couldn't hear you at all for a long time. All I could hear was me, right? And I began to understand the value in listening. Got 2 ears and 1 mouth, so you should listen twice as much. Yeah, okay, it sounds nice, but guess what? That's true for me. I say that to say this, that when I was asked to do this, I was like, oh, no, I don't have a message. I got my experience, and it was strong for me. And then anyway, here I am doing Tradition 1. Our common welfare must come first. Personal recovery, mine, and if you're saying it, yours, depends on NA unity. And I gotta tell you, man, like, so what, I don't have to tell you. When I was using, I wasn't really concerned about the common welfare of the people in the room. I didn't even know half of them, right? I figured they had my welfare in heart, in their minds, right? Because they were looking out the blinds, right, most of the time, right? Right, so, but my real, and I've heard several times that the first step ties into the first tradition, and it wasn't until Kabir was up here speaking that it occurred to me that that's true in my case, that I could see that, because he was talking about surrendering, right? And part of the first tradition for me, right, is surrendering to this process. I wanted to stay home, right? I like being home. You know, I work a lot. I'm tired. I'm sure that a lot of you know that. Recovery has afforded me a lot of gifts. One of them is a job, right? And I work a lot. So when I'm off, I like to stay home. But someone asked me to do this, and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I got in the car at 7 o'clock, Frederick, Maryland. And as I'm driving down 270 and eventually around 495, the heavens opened up. And it was rain like I hadn't seen, like, and I'm not driving my Tahoe. I'm driving a little Mazda 3, and the wind, I can't see, and the rain, and the lightning, and I'm like, you know, I was exhausted just like driving like this, right? And I'm like, fuck, man, maybe I need to just go back home. And I could call him and tell him, because you know what? There's going to be 1,000 million addicts out there. Somebody else can do it, right? But they asked me to do it, right? And it's not about me. So I'm not saying that I would jump off the building. But if I have to pull over to the side of the road and wait for this storm to pass that I hate driving through and hate having to just drive the 3 hours, right? It's not about me. It's about us. It's not about me. It's about we, right? And that realization came to me. It was like I have to surrender to that, because without us, there is no me. Without this, if you guys hadn't been here when I opened the door to try to get my life together, I wouldn't be standing here now. Almost 11 years clean. Like, I couldn't even imagine being 24 hours clean, right? I was clean long enough, right, to pass out and then eventually come to, right? Come to with, like, schemes. How am I going to do this next one, right? But I don't live like that now, right, because of the unity practiced in this program, right? Now, a lot of times, and I learned maybe 2 or 3 years clean, when I became a GSR in Montgomery County, they said, oh, they're going to go to area service, and you're going to represent the group, and you're going to learn a lot. And, like, man, I got to say, though, it wasn't as difficult as being on the hug squad today, right, which was my first time. Because when I saw people rushing in and knocking people over and knocking over the dividers, I was like, holy shit, like, we're supposed to be better, right? But it wasn't even about you at that point. It was about me. How do I respond to that? Because I came here, right, for me, but for you to serve the common welfare, right? And it was then that I realized again, and I'm going to have to do this several times, I'm sure, that surrendering to that principle of unity is going to be necessary if we are to survive as a group. Not about me. It's about we. So we may have, and I know that oftentimes my opinion differs from yours, because I, personal experience, like just 10, 20 minutes ago, why don't we try to do it like this? Well, no, we can't. And I'm not doing it that way. And I just told you we can. And, but see, while we're doing that, we're all in the same room, right? Trying to get people registered, trying to get people where they need to go or where they would like to be, all in the spirit of recovery, all under this umbrella provided by all of us, by the Fellowship for Recovery, right? And some of us, I know, let me bring it back to me, because if somebody told me, if I'm not talking about me, I ain't talking about shit, right? So I do the best that I can to just, how can I say, it's in my best interest to do what I can to serve the common good. I don't always agree, but it doesn't really matter. I can agree to disagree. I kind of don't like that, but it's true. It doesn't really matter, because if I'm left in charge, I'm going to screw it up. The personal evidence that I have of that is the time that I spent out on the street. Like Jay was just saying to me, hey, you know what? I can take your spot and you can go and get something to eat, because I haven't eaten since like 5:30 this morning, right? I just had that water and somebody was cool enough to give me one of those icebreaker mints. Really nice, right? So, but I was telling him kind of jokingly that, you know, I've gone days, well, it's not a joke, but I said it lightly. I've gone days without eating. Like days. Where a Snickers bar on the ground was a banquet for me. And when I smoked cigarettes, the best place for me to find them was in ashtrays outside of bars. Because if they saw me coming, they would close the door, they'd drop the cigarettes, and I would be happy if they would, you know, if it was long enough, I could smoke for a while. But that's how I lived. I lived in a shelter. It was very hard for me, and I didn't know how not to do what I was doing. It wasn't until I came into these doors that someone said to me, because I found it hard to put it down, and I needed to physically be removed from the drug. I didn't go to prison. That's not part of my story. But after having some clean time, right, someone brought a message into me and said, hey, you know what? You don't have to use. And it was like, because it never occurred to me that I didn't have to use. Of course I have to use. I'm breathing. I'm smoking. Stupid. Right? But I didn't have to, and that was possible because someone said, yeah, instead of going home and making dinner after my long day at work or spending time with my wife or my kids, I'm going to go to a place where people would just as soon shoot me as look at me and tell them that your life doesn't have to be the way that it is. And it's only now in recovery that I've begun to see past myself, which for real, is not a whole lot, right? I mean, it's just enough. I'm not going to slam myself, but I realize I'm not even the center of my own universe. Like, I'm not. Somebody always needs something, man. Servants, right? The posture in the heart was the last theme. But that's true, man. Like, that's true. Otherwise, I'm just fucking eating and taking up space. Right, I was permitted to come through this process because a lot of us don't make it. A lot of us die. I've seen it. I work in healthcare. We die. Right? That I'm here suggests that I have something to offer to the person who's going through that. And I may not see it. In fact, I don't. I'm just trusting the process right now. I don't know. But I'm here for a reason. We are the reason. It hasn't been easy for me. You know, I've had to learn these things. As I, you know, you learn the traditions when you... Well, I've learned the traditions as I've broken them. I mean, you know, no, you're not supposed to do that. What do you mean? I'm just taking a picture. Or, you know, what are you talking about? You know, they could give us money. And then Father so-and-so wants to come in and, you know, bless everybody, whatever. Let them do it, right? But that's not how we get down. The traditions protect our group. All of the traditions, right, say our and group, like all of them. It doesn't say you or me. It says we. And all of it supports the first one. All of it. That our common welfare has to come first. We may not be happy, but damn if we're going to be a little bit miffed, right? We'll be a little bit miffed, but we'll be doing it clean. You be mad, but do it clean. You can disagree, have different religious beliefs, whatever the hell you want. Black, white, male, female, whatever. Trump, no Trump? Clean. Clean. On my 8th year anniversary, I bought a house. Right? No, I'm like, some, it blows my mind to look at it. I'm like, oh. Recovery offers a lot of gifts. And I have to say before I finish, right, that just because they're offered doesn't mean that I have to take them. Some I've taken and should not have. It's like, oh yeah, I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to this because I worked so hard, because I came through, and then I'm like, yo, somebody take this from me. But why did I have to, yeah. So being clean doesn't give me the right to just make decisions on my own all the time, willy-nilly. I got to check with people. I have an awesome network, sponsor, grand sponsor, great grand sponsor, like new home in Frederick, right? Network of guys in Frederick, right? So I feel pretty well secure. And that would not at all be possible for me if it hadn't been for the people who came before me, many of whom are sitting in this room, because I almost have 11 years clean. There are people in here with like 30 years. It's like, oh my, 30 years. That's older than some of the people in the room. So, I don't want to ramble. Like, I don't. I have great respect for this program. I say as little as possible, not just because I'm really not too comfortable listening to my own voice, but because after a while, ego likes to come up. And ego has no place here. Like, it just doesn't. We came to celebrate NA. We came to celebrate the promise. This vehicle that's given us all a new life, a new chance. Like, a chance. Every day is going to be different. Not like when I was using. Every day could be different. It's always going to be good, but always going to be better. I don't really know what else to say on that. It seems to me that, you know what, let me just, the last thing I'd like to do is just express my gratitude. Because I have great gratitude for this program. I don't always understand what's happening to me, but doors are opening. I'm owning my shit, excuse my French. Like, I don't fake the funk anymore. Like, there are things that I don't want to tell people, but I gotta tell them. It's like, oh God, I gotta tell them. But I have that because of this, because I've gained some integrity and I value peace. And knowing that when I get it, it's something that I have to nurture. I can't just get it and expect that it's going to be there. I have to nurture it. I have to feed it. And thank God for the steps of my sponsor and my network and for you. So if you're new, really, give yourself a break, man. Like, really, give yourself a break. It's going to be all right. If I could do it, if I can be here, you could damn sure do it. Darren, I'm an addict. Thank you so much.